ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Ian Stouffer with Goalkeeper U. Let me tell you how much fun it was talking to another Ian. I can't tell you how giddy I got inside by saying, Ian, how are you? Or our correspondence before the interview. So besides that, the interview was phenomenal in my opinion. Ian talks about his program that he runs and what is involved. And we kind of covered a high level and low, kind of deep dived in some areas. I do have some bad news going forward with my podcast. That anything more than an hour length in recording, I'm going to have to break up into two parts because of editing purposes. So from here on out, if I have more than an hour of a recording of an episode, I'm going to have to break it up or find a way to edit out stuff out of it that weren't really high level of importance. But besides that, let's start this chat and head to the pitch. It's interesting to me as a parent because I don't have a background in soccer at all. So to understand what this process is gives a general idea of what you're doing when you have them out there. And it does allow parents to have a better understanding what they should expect, what they should see, not just with you, but with anyone that's training their kid. I think that's important because at the end of the day, I will say it, that soccer is what... I can't remember the number. It's in the billions in the United States for youth sports. And I'm all about parents getting their bang for their buck and
I'm one of those parents. I want what I get, and I want a good value for what I'm getting. And it's very hard to find a great coach. I have to phrase it correctly. A great coach that understands the player, that can relate to the player. I always preach, you have to find the right coach for your player. It's not the right team. It's the right coach to develop your player at the younger ages. As they get older, it's being in the right place at the right time to advance. And I think in my opinion, talking to enough people now, is a true statement. It's not just your talent alone, but what you're teaching, and for parents to understand, that's the view I'm looking at this from, is the value that you're providing and the expectation. And from the sounds of it, this digs a little bit deeper. And I think we're doing a kind of switch here a little bit, because you talked about all these curriculums you've been part of and been doing. You talked about it with the Sparks and the curriculum. You started with the Sparks. I think a lot of coaches that are part of curriculums, that you started the curriculums with the Sparks, which brings you back to where you are today, I feel, listening to your soccer journey and how you approach the task of developing. I don't even call it training. It's truly developing keepers to be where they're at. And when you're looking at this from that perspective, you started talking about the Sparks and the curriculum that you created back in Denver. And I feel like, is that where you built your foundation for all this, or your understanding? Because North Texas, I have conversations, is a beast. And everyone thinks, oh no, Southern California is worse, or Phoenix, Arizona is bad, Denver, Colorado, or St. Louis, or Florida. And I always chuckle. I go, I've heard stories from all over, and I think Texas is its own unique beast. Then you get into North Texas, and it's even crazier. And starting with the curriculums you created, how does that change your perspective then on building this? Because from the sounds of it, every great coach, in my opinion, is a great teacher. And the only way you get a great teacher is by having a good plan, game plan, and that's your curriculum. So you started with the Sparks, which is the younger group. So can you start off with that and explain that a little bit more to me, and share a little bit about what that was?
Sure. To be honest, I think I just got really lucky. Everything kind of fell into place. I told you that I was just volunteering, coaching U6 girls, and then took on more teams and then went to the club with this plan. But yeah, it's just a vision I had. I just woke up one morning and it sounds like a fairy tale, but anyway, so I woke up one morning and I need to write down all these ideas that I have. And I was 27 or 28 years old at the time, something. I saw that I needed a plan because the housing market was going to crash regardless. So I went to the clubs with this curriculum, but I just had a vision of progression, just tons of fun. I had taken the grassroots course just before, got a lot of good ideas from there. And then I wrote this curriculum based on that and a bunch of ideas I had. And I only had 6 weeks of it. And then eventually I had 10 weeks and then I had 16 weeks. At the younger age, it's just about control, right? So I started with, okay, we're using our feet, no hands, right? I started this thing called Soccer Island, right? Soccer Island, right, is surrounded by the ocean. What's in the ocean? Sharks. And what do sharks like to eat? Soccer balls. So we've got to keep our soccer balls inside on the island. Otherwise, the sharks will eat them. And I'd actually have parents over there eating the soccer balls when they went out, and the kids would laugh. And this is with the little Sparks program. Then we got into different types of skill moves, pullbacks. Okay, if the ball is moving too far this way and I need to go back that way, I have to change direction. And we had chops, inside chop, outside chop, right? I don't get too far into it. And we talked about shooting with laces, toe down, all of that. We got into a little bit of staying behind the ball, being tactical. We got into shielding, just super basic technical things where you can keep the ball, you can control the ball. And that's what it's all about, is control at that age, right? Don't kick, we control. And so I had that vision and I became just obsessed with curriculum. And then when I got into Soccer Shots, I started helping with I was on the curriculum committee for a couple of years. I wrote the mini curriculum for the itty bits, and I had a lot to do, except even more, I shouldn't say dumbed down, but elementary basic, a lot of songs and things like that, a lot of colors, right? It was parent aided even. Regardless, I became obsessed with curriculum. And then once I got into the goalkeeper academy, when I just put pen to paper and sat down and I wrote it all down with, it was just like this, you know, it was like that, pencil and paper, and eventually got it on electronic format, and like now I just follow that. I think that answers your question. And like I said, I'm finding myself rambling a lot. There's a lot of information that I haven't gotten out in my head. You talked about different markets as well. Every large soccer market is going to be somewhat similar. There are going to be a lot of positive experiences, a lot of negative experiences. North Texas, and I've been to a lot of them. I'm from SoCal actually, but grew up here, or my older adolescent years here in DFW, then went to Denver and was coaching there. I go back a lot to SoCal, and I know a lot about most of the soccer markets around the country, given my kids have had some success and been around the country a bunch. I would say that North Texas market is one of the more extreme, if not the most extreme. And I think everyone has the keeping up with the Joneses. And in general, in my opinion, and this is a very strong opinion, not strong, but probably argumentative opinion, I think about 50% of the kids playing competitive soccer should be playing rec. They shouldn't. They're fueling the fire of the big businesses and the clubs and what have you. And because of that, it drives the need for these clubs to hire other coaches that really aren't that qualified or don't like what they're doing. They just want a paycheck, or they don't want to work corporate jobs. So the quality of coaching goes down, but the kids keep rolling in and they keep adding depth to U13. Now there's 16 teams and U13 girls now, right? Why? They probably shouldn't be. So it's more difficult. And these parents have bad experiences. Like this coach, terrible and this and that. And the training sessions, he's on his phone the whole time. And right. And it's just lazy and they're just scrimmaging. And then my kid doesn't get playing time and he brings in some other girl from another team, whatever it may be. But you've heard all these stories. These coaches probably shouldn't be coaching, right? You mentioned that it's hard to find a good coach, right? That's a fact. And I know a lot of coaches, almost all of them in North Texas. Like I probably know 70% of the coaches in North Texas at all the big clubs, right? I have them right here on my phone. We talk about goalkeepers all the time. I've grown a reputation for that. But I would say that 10% of those, in my opinion, I want my kid to play for. Just 10%. I think the number one quality that parents should look at if they're trying to recognize whether or not this coach is good, one, obviously, is my kid having fun, but two, are they having fun? Do they love what they do? Any coach that you find that loves what he or she does, I bet you'll find that they're a fantastic coach. If they're having fun, your kid's having fun, right? And we're talking at the most, like most, right? So the majority of North Texas is playing their U14 and under. They're 13 and under. Once they get past that age, when they're 14, 15, 18, right? The numbers dwindle, obviously, because of burnout and things like that. And that's a whole nother podcast. But they're more specialized and they're focused and they have goals and it's not just fun anymore, right? And that's a whole different ball of wax. But before then, that's where the clubs make their money and they obviously can pay for their top teams and all of that. It's at the younger age and it's really, and this is going to be harsh, but parents that just don't know any better. Johnny down the street, he's playing competitive soccer. And our son, he scores a lot of goals up at Frisco Soccer Association. It's great. But should he really be paying $3,500 a year and all of that to play for a coach that doesn't really care, doesn't want to be there anyway? It's a tough market. It's really just the general keep up with the Joneses. Frisco was named Men's Health Magazine a few years ago as the number one place to raise an athlete. And that, I don't know if it was well-deserved. It's maybe the most competitive place to raise an athlete. But it's just a whole mindset that's very difficult. That's where Landon's coming from in his statement. Right. It's all about just keep up with the Joneses. And then the quality of coaching is down. And there's so many coaches that shouldn't be coaching because they have to, because of the demand that these clubs have on them, because mom and dad want their kid to play too, just like Johnny down the street.
I think And I think the other, I'm not going to blame the pay to play model because we'll never get rid of it because it's here. Mm-hmm. It's here to stay. And unless we're going to have major corporations come in and truly sponsor the MLS or USL or whoever it may be to create true academies where parents have no say in it. And that's the only way this changes. And this was someone posted on social media just the other day talking about Landon's comment and talking about how do we pretty much saying like he's right. And both sides are at fault, the coach, the clubs, mm-hmm. the coaches, and the parents. And I always feel, I'm going to go back to Juan Martinez's interview. He always talks about parents wearing their Gucci purse, Gucci product being shown on social media, and that's their kids, and being proud mom and dad. Look at my kid, just won. They won first place in such and such a tournament this weekend, and they're five. And I get a good chuckle. It's
yeah. Yeah, JM is a bad man. That dude, he knows his stuff.
I find it comical. And because he's the president of a club, and he's saying, we're part of the problem, but how do we fix this? And my answer to everything, you better educate parents. And like you said, you made a hard statement. And I don't think many parents understand that 50%, I could probably say it's probably higher. You probably could say 75% of the kids should be in a more of a grassroots program than a competitive, high-end competitive program. And that's where the difference between the United States and a lot of other parts of the world. I'm slowly learning about Brazil now. But in England, you have your grassroots, and they play all the way until they're, 80, 90 years old in England. If they can still walk and kick a soccer ball, they're still playing soccer over there at all ages. And it's still competitive, but it's not the English Premier Academies or whatever the academy programs they have over there. And I think that is what parents don't understand is the rest of the world. It's truly about development. It's the more and more I've talked to more and more high level coaches, they're all saying we should stop keeping score. We shouldn't be keeping score until the age of 14, 13. We don't need to be knowing who's number one. Who cares? Because at the end of the day, all we're teaching is bigger, faster, stronger wins. I can name some programs here that are very successful programs. They train twice a day or once a day at least. And they have some of the best teams in the country, these coaches. And it's not because they're teaching them to be stronger, faster. I've watched some of their younger teams, where they started off and to where they're at today. They weren't the fastest teams on the pitch. They were the most skilled people on the pitch that could handle the ball, move the ball, and make the runs. It's not because they were faster. It was because they were smarter. And that is, as a parent, it's frustrating. And from the sounds of it, with your program, you're trying to instill that parent IQ on soccer and truly educate them. And I think as parents, we have to understand where to emphasize the importance. Like you said, I will probably say it's higher than 50% of kids shouldn't be in competitive soccer.
I'm glad you agree with me. Yeah, that's, and again, I think it's eye-opening for a rookie parent. When I say rookie parents, their first time through the gamut, they've got 5, 6, and 8, and the 8-year-old's in there now and getting into, they're signing their first, going with their first club, whatever it may be, for them to hear that. It's probably something that's been, it would have been for me even back in the day when I had 80 bits, when I was first starting out as a coach. But yeah, no, it's a culture issue. Again, that's a whole other podcast as well, the whole pay-to-play model. And, I could speak on that for quite a while. But yeah, it comes down to just the culture here in the U.S. And a lot of it has to do with the keeping up with the Joneses piece. There's obviously a lot of other factors and variables that are different from Europe and even South America. So
right. And I don't think parents, we can take this however wherever direction we want. That's the joy of this.
Understood.
Going back to that 50% number, it hurts. It hurts inside because I know that I look at my daughter. She plays club. And honestly, we aren't paying a fortune for it. She's playing with her friends. It's not like three of the girls on the team, or my daughter and two other girls, have played together for almost 3 years.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And so they've grown up. It's like when they first started off, it was free. And I coached her for a bit, and I didn't charge anything. I just charged to rent the space at Blue Skies at the time so we could practice indoor because it was in the winter. And then eventually, my daughter's current coach said, I'm taking your players slowly, and she sure did. But it was my daughter's friends. It wasn't she was leaving me to go play for another coach. It was her to go play with her friends. And me as a parent, you can't compete with that.
No way. Absolutely not. You said how old? She's six, right?
She's six. She'll be seven in December. And you can't compete with that.
Yeah, exactly. Playing with your friends. And it sounds like you've got a good coach set up. I don't know, but It sounds like that might be the case, which is a positive. But yeah, absolutely. It's very difficult. Now, they could just as easily be playing rec together and still be together and having fun. Yes. And probably have close to the same amount of development, if not more. Again, I don't know that your coach and what have you, but yes, a good coach can make a difference. At that age, you can start getting away for if you are one of those that should be playing. That's the time to do it for sure. Yeah, playing, it's tough to compete with the, hey, I want to go play with my friends. And that's part of the hook here in North Tech. There's so many that are doing it. And like you mentioned, that coach was actively already recruiting a lot of your kids, right?
It wasn't against me. It was just because I had really good players on my team. And not like she was taking and charging us for it because she was coaching her own daughter. And So it wasn't like she goes, I can't really charge you all because I'm doing this for my daughter. It's
okay.
So it started off being one thing, and over the years, it's now has turned into she plays for her club, and there's two coaches, and the other coach deserves a paycheck, and I understand that, but it's not like my son's club soccer where he plays and he's U11 and has played up for 3 years, and it's a completely different world, and it's. For parents that don't understand the dynamics of it, it's like we went through this horrible growing, and we're still going through this horrible growing pain. And I feel like I'm very heavily invested in my kids' soccer, my son's soccer and my daughter's soccer, and I understand it. And, but I still feel like I know a grain of salt worth because it's such a large topic here. And as parents growing through this, you have, your kids are in college now, so you're a few years ahead of me here.
But, I have one U15 boy.
Right.
Yeah, so he's still playing here, yeah.
And so you understand, I feel like if you're not constantly learning about the dynamics of the environment that where players are playing in or the culture they're playing in, your player will never achieve whatever their goals is. And I think that's the other side of that 50% you were talking about. I will probably say, I like to say of, they always said 1 or 2% of kids or less than 1% of kids go pro. And I always make the argument, let's break that 1% down more. Because that 1% is a different breed of people. The more I've talked to professional athletes and the more I understand people have played at a high level or coached at a high level, that 1%, almost all of, if you take that 1% they're talking about, so I'll break it down. So if you take the top, I'm going to use my son's age group, 2014 players in the Metroplex, how many of them actually have a smart IQ versus very good ball skills? Which ones going to get farther? Because the ball skills can always be trained. The IQ is your natural talent. And this is Ian speaking here, not anyone else. And if you take them, which ones of those kids that are in the top 1% then are going to be successful? Because I always say once puberty hits, it all goes out the window anyways. But the IQ stays. It can grow. And I don't know how to get parents to understand. The kids that put the grind in every single day have a greater chance to be successful than the kids that just go out and practice 3 days a week and that's the only time they touch the ball. And I don't know how, so that 50% number, it's an accurate number because they're the ones that are just there to have fun. They aren't there to truly compete. And this is the conversation we have with my 11-year-old. If you want to go play with friends, we'll go put you in rec and we'll go get all your friends. We'll play rec.
Like I think every parent's had that at some point with their, I had it with all three of mine.
You know, so, and I think that's the point is that if you want to go compete, you go play club. But if you want to have fun and play with friends, I'll go coach your team. We'll go play rec. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. It's hard for those kids to understand that. And that's part of the culture piece as well, which is tough. It is what it is there.
Now, with your keepers, and this makes me think of rec, do you recommend, I've always been told, because keepers need to have good ball skills, do you recommend them go play rec? And this is the one thing I thought was one of the best advice I ever heard a keeper was given was go play rec. If it fits into your schedule, go play rec. Go play the field, but don't tell them you're a keeper. Because you'll be stuck in the you'll be stuck in between the posts. And how do you encourage players to develop? You have a strong opinion on this stuff here and the viewpoint on it. So how do you encourage these players?
You are 1,000% accurate, Ian, when it comes to that is what a goalkeeper should do these days. Yes. Yeah, playing rec is fantastic, and obviously you cannot tell them you're a goalkeeper. Otherwise, they'll stick you back there. Oh, okay, maybe you can be the backup. Oh, no, you had a good game, so I need you in here for this tournament or whatever it may be. Or playing the top team, so you have to be in there. No, and The most ideal situation for a developing goalkeeper is to be in a club where you have different tiers of teams under one coach. And on the top team, you play as a goalkeeper, but they have a second team as well. And you play in the field for that one. And I'm talking about, these are your golden years of development. So it's, in my opinion, it's U9 to U12 right in there. So you're developing all of that technical skill under pressure in matches. So where it really counts, it's the most ideal situation. If you don't have that situation, the rec option's a good one to go play rec as well at that age. Youth academy, you're not signing contracts yet, all of that. I think it's just go do that as well. It's fantastic for the goalkeepers. It's not only just the touches, it's just the aspect, the mindset of what these positions, what are the roles of these positions, what are they thinking under different scenario, right? And almost every keeper I had that's really made it, that's playing high level D1 or is playing pro now, when they were young in those developmental years, they had that ideal situation and or they were on a team where they were getting pummeled. As a goalkeeper or a center back, as a parent, I want my kid on a team that isn't the top team. Maybe the top league is fine, but I want to be a lower team there ideally because I want to get as much adverse situation coming at me as possible to see as much, and then everything becomes second nature. You can handle anything. The game's in slow motion eventually, right? So those kids that do that are at a high advantage, right? My own daughter, I did that intentionally. She could have played on the top team when she was 11 years old. And I said, you know what? I think it's going to be better to do this, babe. I was able to coerce her to play on the second team as the goalkeeper. And she just got so much work that obviously when the time came and she was on the top team. But then at that point, she'd faced so much adverse situation. It was great. Playing with your feet a lot. Being able to obviously visualize, okay, this is what this center back's going to do in this scenario here. This is what that attacking player is going to do in this scenario. This is how the backside attacker or the backside midfielder is going to act here. So I've done that. I've seen it, right? And now this is what's going to happen. So those are all good things, and I certainly encourage those for goalkeepers.
Now, I just watched the Hope Solo documentary recently on Netflix. Yeah. And she was a field player until she went to college. Yeah. I knew she played I thought she started in high school playing goalie, like varsity.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was freshman year in college she switched from midfield striker position, winger, to full-time keeper.
Yeah.
And the success she had, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, was that 50% number. It's the drive and the determination. Mm-hmm. So does that help, or do you see that more and more now at these younger ages coming out to be goalies? Because as I'm learning, it takes a little bit, a special train of thought to be a keeper, because you're having everyone coming at you and a lot more chances of high risk injuries. I personally feel watching.
For sure. Absolutely.
Because of the position.
That's a big aspect of my training is safety, strength and safety. A massive aspect of most of my goalkeepers, they do it the right way technically, so we stay away from that. But to get back to your question, for sure, that's absolutely something that's happening quite a bit. A situation comes to mind that Molly Pritchard, she's the goalkeeper at Ohio State. She never played in the goal. She was a center back. The coach actually saw, okay, so she's 6 foot, right? So that helps. But just her field vision and athleticism, and then recruited her as a goalkeeper. And she was All-American center back. Crazy. That's happening. I don't have it personally with my own kids, but I started playing goalkeeper when I was 16 years old, very first time, never had a lesson. And I think that it's becoming a trend for sure, just because for everything we talked about before, you have that knowledge. I think Hope was a forward. I haven't seen the documentary, but I think she was a striker.
Leading scorer in the country.
Okay, yes. I was as well a forward before I started playing goalkeeper. So thinking about the tendencies and the vision of an attacking player and having that knowledge going in to being a goalkeeper if you're already athletic is key. Obviously, athleticism has to be there, coordination, agility, good solid core, and that can make a crazy successful goalkeeper if you have that knowledge already, like Hope had, Molly Pritchard. And I mean, again, that's something that's happening quite a bit, the conversion over just, okay, massive, just crazy athlete and right place, right time. We're going to try this and it works out. Matt Turner, I mean, he was a baseball pitcher, right? And a basketball player and this and that. And he didn't start playing goalkeeper till a late age as well.
I think it was college.
I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah. He was a walk-on, if I'm remembering this story right. And
that's crazy, insane. So to think about that, didn't even play high school soccer. And in college, he starts playing. And all of a sudden, hey, I'm the best keeper in the country, which obviously is arguable. But
right, the current best keeper in the country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that's the thing. I don't think people realize how unique the keeper position is. And I feel like the striker is another one. And I have my opinion on that. And that's a whole 2 days worth of conversation I feel I could go on.
Yeah.
But the keeper to me, it's, I think Matt Montaigne said the best point was it's the loneliest position on the pitch. And either if you make it or break it, in his interview, he talked about it. It's if you win, you're the best person on the field. If you lose, you're the enemy and you have no friends that day. And he talked about going and playing and not having friends to go play with because no one wanted to hang out with because he's succeeded goals.
You have to love the pressure to play this position. And even a striker, it's you have to because you're the one that's – your failures are more – they're magnified at the ends of the pitch, right? Not in the middle.
Right.
Right. So in the back and in the front, right? If you miss a wide open goal or you miss a PK, it's just the same as allowing a goal that you should have made a save on an expected save. Right. So you have to love the pressure. You have to thrive on that to be successful at a higher age and level in this position for sure.
Do you feel like as keepers are growing up today and there's the keeping up with the Joneses factor because there's all the fancy stuff that you can get and the fancy tricks that you can learn. That's just not keeping up with the Joneses, but that's competitiveness. But still, you're keeping up with other people. Do you think in time in the United States, do you think the keeper position will be, how do I phrase it, without having to go abroad? That might be the way of putting it. Without going abroad to go be a keeper, will be more successful here eventually? Or do you think it will be having to go play in the higher level competition in order to have a national team keeper? For an example, that's been the argument. Colorado's keeper feels like their keeper was snubbed from the national team, and they made it very clear in the media recently that they have with their keeper and backing him. Do you think we'll see more keepers from the United States, from the MLS or USL, making the national team versus playing abroad?
Having to go play the EPL. Yeah, no, I absolutely do. Right. And this isn't just the optimistic view that has become trendy. Oh, it's we're going to win a World Cup eventually and everything's growing in the US, which these are true statements. Everyone's saying them just to say them, in my opinion, most people. Anyway, regardless, no, yes, this is definitely going to happen, in my opinion. I don't think that as a goalkeeper, again, as it goes back to my point there, where you're facing more adverse situation, right? You can face just the same adverse situation here. The level doesn't really matter, right? If you're, it's relative. So if your back line is fantastic, right? The striking, the attacking is fantastic. If you're playing the MLS, if they're going to be equal there, it's not quite the level, but as a goalkeeper, you're still facing the same amount of situation. So no, I don't think it should be necessary. I think that's an old school mindset. If that's the decision makers that are making decisions on goalkeeping based on level played, obviously you have to play at a very high level, but you don't have to be at the pinnacle of the world. You don't have to go play at Chelsea to be fit to be the U.S. national goalkeeper, in my opinion. No, because like I said, it's all relative and the goalkeeper's facing the same challenges here or there just because the same amount, number, type, all of those things, just because the levels are relatively even when you drop down to the MLS versus there's no argument that EPL or La Liga or any of those are not higher level quality across the board than they are in the States with MLS. But I don't think that, I think that a time's going to come where we'll have a fresh initiative and viewpoint and what have you, where you're not going to have that type of resume to be U.S. national team goalkeeper.
I just look at it because looking at the MLS and I'm looking at the goalkeepers we have, I'm looking at Martin Paz that plays for FC Dallas. Yeah. And the training he has and the opportunities that he has been chasing him now says a lot about the keeping training. And if he's able to go play in those leagues over in Europe, it says a lot about the training being done here in the MLS. And this gives a lot of credit to keep hoping for further success for our keepers here locally.
100%. 100%. Yeah, absolutely. I love that guy. Shot stopping wise, phenomenal. I wish I had a chance and to coach him up a little bit here and there. But he'd be like, who are you? What are you doing? But there are a few things I see that he has habit wise, as far as moving across the goal and things, but that he can improve upon and have some more success. And when he fails, it's typically the same type of situation. Regardless, yes, it's phenomenal. I've been lucky enough. My son now plays in the academy at FC Dallas, and the difference, the level of goalkeeper specific training is off the charts, right? It's that I think there's a lot of emphasis being put onto the goalkeeping position specifically in the MLS academies now, both on obviously in the actual real academy and then the MLS Next Pro up to the highest level. So it's good stuff.
That's awesome to hear. I'm going to wrap this up because that's my favorite question here. So who has been your greatest influence as you as a player, and who has been the greatest influence on you as a coach?
Oh man. So I'm going to go with the second one on me as a coach, man, just even last night, I received these emails and just feedback from mom and dad. And this goes back to my Soccer Shouts days, but as a coach, and if you love what you do so much and you love your kids and you receive something positive that's just random, it's not solicited. This other coach came up to Ashley after the match and said, man, she was phenomenal. She's got great training, I can see. Or these things happen all the time. That is, to me, that feeds me and makes me love what I do even more. Sometimes I'm on the pitch and I'll tear up whenever I hear a story from my kid before session about what he or she did just like last weekend, and they thank me, right? That's, I would say that my family, my parents are my greatest influence as a coach. Like I mentioned, I was never coached myself in this position specifically. So that would be certainly all the feedback that I get. And sometimes it's negative, right? And it helps me grow and learn, right? And that's good too. I would say influentially, it's whatever I get from my parents and from my kids, everything I get back from them. And then you said as a player?
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be my high school coach, which is funny. Never really played soccer. This is the early 90s, and you might have similar stories. If you played high school soccer back in the 90s in Texas, it was a guy that I'm cross-country coach. This is a low man on the totem pole sport. So you go over and coach soccer as well. But he just made the training session so fun. He gave me my initial opportunity to be in goal. So I would say off the top of my head, that's probably my number one influence as a player. As I mentioned, I played up through eighth grade and then didn't play until 10th. I took a little time off. I was just focusing on baseball, got back into soccer. Yeah, it would probably be Coach Kerry Jones there. I see him occasionally. I run into him or on Facebook or something, and I thank him for giving me the opportunity. He steered my life in this direction. Obviously, it was subconsciously, but I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today had he not given me that opportunity and really made me fall in love with the sport again.
Hey, everyone. I hope you all have enjoyed part two with Ian Stouffer. Coach Ian did a phenomenal job in this interview explaining what his program is, sharing his insight and philosophies, how he does things, what his program's like. And if you have a goalkeeper wanting to advance, he might be your coach. It's about finding that right coach to help motivate your player. He just might be it for your player. So I'd recommend checking him out, and all of his information will be listed in the comments of this episode and the prior episode. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.